Okay, so everybody, we are in the middle of the second parak of Sefer Melachim Aleph. If I'm not mistaken, we finished off last time on in parak Bet. We're up to pasuk. Around Kaf Aleph, Kaf Bet. Is that right? Let's just summarize where we got up to. You'll tell me if we did this already, but I'm fairly certain this is where we're up to. So if you recall, Shlomo HaMelech is in a late 11th, the 11th hour, he is appointed king. David agrees to this after at the behest of his wife Bathsheba, as well as Natan Hanavi. Right? And now, Adoniah, if you recall, was one of David's other sons. Let's just get that door closed. Yeah. Was one of David's other sons, and he started an insurrection. He claimed the kingship for himself, even though David hadn't officially appointed him. And David, we're in the middle of a shir. Yeah, you can't hear. David. David, gentle soul. Yeah, okay. So, Adoniah starts, claims the kingship for himself. At this point, Bathsheba and Natan intervene, and Shlomo is made king. And then Adoniah comes with a very strange request. What is the request that he makes of goes to Bathsheba, actually. What request does he make of Bathsheba and Shlomo? What does he ask for? Avishaga Shunamit. Can I just marry this that young woman that was helping my father? And Bathsheba seems to be taken in by this request. Not a problem. We could try to, meet your needs in this regard and give you Avishag. Bathsheba probably was pretty happy to get rid of Avishag in any case. But what happens after this is that how does Shlomo HaMelech respond? Did we look at this inside? So I think we were just getting here, Shlomo's response. So before getting to Shlomo's response, we studied historically in Tanakh, what does it mean when a son tries to take the concubines, the pilagshim of his father? What is that saying? Okay.
They challenge the
change of the guard. I'm the next king. I'm the one who should be in power. And the concubines were sort of the possessions of the previous king. They were passed on to the next one. We see this by Avshalom, who takes 10 of David's women when he has his rebellion. We see this by Reuven and Bilhah, according to the Pshat, when Reuven lays with Bilhah. This is also his way of saying, "I'm the next in line. Yaakov, move aside. It's time for the new leader." So, how does Shlomo respond to this request? Let's look at Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vayan Hamelech Shlomo Vayomer Imo. Shlomo sees right through this. This is not an innocent request for Adoniyahu who can't get a date on J date. This is not Adoniyahu who's struggling to find the right girl for himself. He just wants to find the shidduch. This is Adoniyah. This is a power move. It's a power play. Vayan Hamelech Shlomo Vayomer Imo. Shlomo says to his mother, "Velama Acholat Avishag Shlomit Adoniyahu. Why are you giving? Why are you willing to give Avishag to Adoniyahu? Why don't you just give him the kingdom as well? He's my older brother. And he started this insurrection with Avyatar Kohen and Yoav ben Tzruya. So Shlomo definitely feels threatened by Adoniyahu still. And justifiably so, because Adoniah is threatening, and he's still around, and he's still Shlomo's oldest brother, and he still managed to garner the support of the king's closest advisors, Evyatar HaKohen, who we'll read about in just a second. Yoav ben Tzruya, David's general. So Shlomo has reason to be concerned about this, and not just from a real politic perspective, but even from a, we can make the case, you have to solidify your kingdom, you have to establish your authority. This is a very important thing for a king to have. Vayishava Melech Shlomo b'Shlemimor. Shlomo now swears, "Ko yaseh li Elokim v'ko yosif ki v'nafsho diber Adoniyahu et hadavar hazeh." He says, "By God's, by the living God, Adoniyahu has sort of sworn, given up his life by making this request. this is the end for Adoniyahu. I'm not letting this go on further. You know, first you start with one rocket, then you shoot another one, then another one, and slowly your deterrence, you've removed the deterrence from the other side. He says, we're not giving in to this anymore. We're not letting Adoniyahu reestablish himself. He's got to go. Thank God that Hashem established me in the seat of my father. He made me a home, meaning a monarchy. Today, Adoniyahu is we're taking him out. He sends one of his guardsmen. He kills Adoniyahu, and Adoniyahu is over. He's done. Okay, it's pretty strong stuff, no doubt. But a king does need to establish his authority. A king needs to say again, what? Yeah. That's sort of what this is. So we have a tradition of sorts of this. Some were justified than others. Most recent ones are very, very justified. Well, Eviatar HaKohen. Now, what about Eviatar? He joined in Adoniyahu's group as well. What do you do with these people? What do you do now that he's still around, but you know whose side he was on just a few, you know, just right before this? So this is going to be very complicated because Eviatar is not just anybody. He's very important to David. We'll see why. So let's see how Shlomo responds, and then we'll see what why. Well, Eviatar Kohen Amar HaMelech, and to Eviatar the king said, Anatot lech al sadecha ki ish mavetata, go to Anatot. Where is Anatot? Anybody know? There's a yeshuv today, Anatot. It's in Binyamin, if I'm not mistaken. It's in the area of Binyamin. I remember I spent the summer in Yishuv Alon. It's on the way to the Dead Sea. And from Alon, you're able to see Anatot. Why did this come up in discussion? Because I had one course there with Micha Goodman. It was a tikva seminar. And Micha Goodman pointed out that Rav Benny Lau came to, it was Ein Prat, to write his book on Sefer Yirmiyahu. There's a Sefer Yirmiyahu by, it's part of Tanakh, but Rav Benny Lau wrote a commentary on it. And he wanted to be near where Yirmiyahu HaNavi lived. Where did Yirmiyahu HaNavi live? Anatot, which is a city of Kohanim, right in the area of Binyamin. So he came to Alon, to be in Alon, near to breathe in the dust, the spirit of Anatot, and to write this book on Yirmiyahu. So Anatot is it's northeast of Yerushalayim. So he tells him, go back to Anatot. You're leaving the capital. You're leaving Yerushalayim. You're leaving Washington. It's time to go back to the suburbs. Go back home. Vayomazeh lo amitecha kinasat adaron Hashem Hashem Elokim lifnei David avdi v'chi hit'anita b'chol asher hit'ana avi. He says, I'm not going to kill you. You are deserving of death because you rebelled against the king. But I will not do this because you carried the Aron with my father. And furthermore, you suffered with him in all the suffering that he experienced. So we're going to see what he's referring to here. What does he do? Shlomo vayigar Shlomo Eviatar miyot kohen Hashem. He demotes him. Shlomo demotes him from being a priest anymore. Okay? And this fulfilled the prophecy of Beit Eli, the family of Eli no longer being priests. If you remember Eli, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, Eli accuses Hannah of what? Of drunkenness when she's davening. Okay, and that's how cynical the political leadership had become. That they see a woman davening with proper kavanah, and he says, this woman must be drunk. You know, that's how pervasive the Kiddush clubs were. That was the first assumption that this high priest had, that she must be drunk, as opposed to thinking, wow, she came here to daven with kavanah. So what happened with Eviatar? If you recall, David HaMelech was being chased by Shaul. Where does David go for sanctuary? He goes to the city of Nov. No, the city of Kohanim. It's where the Mishkan was after Shiloh was destroyed. And David sends, excuse me, Shaul sends a search party after David. Who does he send? Doeg HaEdomi. Doeg comes to the city of Nob and he says, I heard David was here. And he says, no, we don't know anything about him, even though they had helped him. And Doeg doesn't believe them, and he massacres all of the priests in the city of Nob. This is really the worst thing Shaul let happen under his reign. And David flees. David had, you know, gotten out. And there's one Kohen who is saved. That Kohen is Eviatar. And Eviatar was young at the time, if I'm not mistaken. And David says, you're going to stay with me. You're going to be with me. I'm going to protect you with my men. And so Eviatar was with David while he was fleeing Shaul for a very long period of time. And they went through so much together. They were childhood friends. You know, when you go through tough experiences with someone else, you build a bond, a very, very deep human bond, okay? And David had that with Eviatar. And then for Eviatar to join, you know, against, you know, join, you know, support Adoniyahu instead of waiting at least for the king to declare who was going to be king, this was a real stab in the back. So Shlomo has to balance these things. On the one hand, Eviatar was a great ally of the king for many years and a great friend. On the other hand, he chose the wrong side of history. So what do you do? So someone like this, you don't kill them, but you also don't let them continue to be a priest. Now, the truth is that in Perek Dalet, we'll see that Eviatar does come back. If you look for a second... Yeah, look at Dalet. This is the cabinet of Shlomo HaMelech, Uvenayahu ben Yehoyada al Hatava, v'tzadok, v'Eviatar Kohanim. Tzadok and Eviatar, now Eviatar has returned. So maybe he's reconciled. He's Shlomo recognizes that he's not really a thread. He was just, you know, sort of sucked into this... this group, but in any case, he comes back. No. Now we move on to the more complicated figures. Because if you recall, David warned Shlomo about a few people. He warned him about Yoav, and he warned him about Shimi ben Gera. And now we're going to see what happens with Yoav. And Yoav, this is a very complicated relationship between David and Yoav ben Tsruya. Very complicated relationship. Okay, because Yoav is David's Ramatkal. Okay, that's what he is. He is the head of David's army, and they were very successful. They conquered many enemies, the Plishtim. They fought against Shaul. Ultimately, I mean, they ended up, you know, persevering against Shaul. And Yoav was with David from the beginning all the way to the end. And he is someone who's so close with David. He rebukes David at times. Okay, he rebukes the king. He speaks directly to the king. And there's no filter. And this is actually, this is critical for any leader, that you can't just have yes men around you. You have to have people who will tell you the truth, the unvarnished truth. But every good leader needs it. It's not fun to have it. Certain presidents would prefer to just have yes men around them. And we see the downsides of this. They make bad decisions because... in the end of the day, none of us are really capable of seeing the whole picture, and you need to have, you know, different minds coming together to make good decisions. And this is why any prime minister or president who thinks that they alone can, you know, run a country is totally untrustworthy and unworthy of holding office. So David has this in Yoav, but Yoav has proven himself to be dangerous, okay? Very dangerous. So let's read what happens to Yoav, and then we'll understand why this comes about. So, v'hashmua ba'ad Yoav. So Yoav gets word, hi Barbara, Yoav gets word that we're in Shmuel, we're in Melachim Bet, Perek Bet, Pasuk Kafchet. Yoav gets word that he's next in line. That David has already warned Shlomo about him, and that he should be concerned. So what does Yoav do? Yoav nata achrei Adoniyahu. Yoav also ran after Adoniyahu, v'achrei Avshalom lo nata. Although he didn't follow after Avshalom. Vayanos Yoav el Oel Hashem. Yoav needs to find sanctuary. So where do you go? So there were no flights abroad. Okay, he couldn't get a ticket out of Ben-Gurion to leave the country and to try to flee. Vayachazek b'karnot ha-mizbeach. So what do? You go to the mizbeach. You go to the temple, and you stay there, and you try to find protection in the temple. Okay, this is also what Adoniyahu did earlier. We'll talk about this in a little bit, what the significance of this is. Okay, but there's a concept called the right to asylum. Okay, and that's where this comes from. Okay, he's essentially seeking out asylum. Vayugad ha-melech Shlomo kinas Yoav. Shlomo is told that Yoav ran away. El Ohel Hashem, to the Ohel of Hashem. V'ne'et l'mizbeach, and he's by the mizbeach. But just super, I mean, just, what's the value? Why would you go to the mizbeach? No? What is it about the mizbeach? It's holy. And what? No one's, exactly. To kill the guy in the Ohel Hashem would be really be problematic. It's like today when people like Julian Assange go to the, he's been at the Peru, who's it? Which country is it? Ecuador. The embassy of Ecuador. He's living in the embassy there, taking up a lot of space, and apparently he wasn't so clean, and, you know, they really didn't like having him there. But it's asylum. You know, you're not allowed to kick people out. I think you're not allowed to.
This was Pollard's mistake.
What?
This was Pollard's mistake, that he ran to the embassy instead of going to a safe house.
Who? This is Assange?
No, it's Pollard.
Oh, Pollard. Oh, Jonathan Pollard. Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. So, anyway, so different types of safe spaces. They used to be a mizbeach, and then now they're, you know, diplomatic embassies. Anyway, so Shlomo's told about this. Vayishlach Shlomo b'nayo ben Yodel, emor lech begabo. B'nayo ben Yodel tells, go and kill him. Vayavo b'nayo al Ohel Hashem, vayomer lav, ko amar melech. So b'nayo goes and he gives a little speech. Okay, what is this speech that he's going to give? He says, tzei. Come out. He says, no, I'm going to die here. I'm not coming out. Vayashev b'nayahu t'melech davar le'mor. B'nayahu goes back to the king and tells him Yoav doesn't want to leave the Mizbeach. Kodi ber Yoav v'chonani. This is how Yoav responded. This is how I answered. Vayomer lo ha-melech. The king says to him, Asei kasher diber ufkabu kvarto. No. That's what Yoav says, that he wants to die on the spot. So go and kill him on the spot. Vahasiroti demei chinam asher shafach Yoav, and will remove the innocent blood that Yoav has shed, ume alai ume al beit avi, from me and from my father's house. Veishiv Hashem et damo al rosho, Hashem will return the blood to his head. Asher paga bishnei anashim tzadikim v'tovim imenu, he killed two people better than himself. Vayahargein b'cherev, and he killed them by the sword. V'avid David lo yada, my father David didn't know about this. We're going to talk about these in just a second. And Avner ben Ner sar tzeva Yisrael, that Amasa ben Yeter sar tzeva Yehuda. Avner and Amasa. V'shavu d'meyam b'rosh Yoav, u'v'rosh zar'o le'olam, the blood will return to him and his children, meaning it will be in their, on their shoulders. U'l'David u'zar'o le'veto l'chiso yesh shalom ad olam me'im Hashem. And David and his descendants, meaning me, Shlomo is saying, our king will be firmly established. We'll remove this innocent blood that has been shed in our name. Vayal b'nayal b'nyo yada, v'yifgabo v'yimiteyu, this is Pasuk la'medalad, b'nayal goes up and kills him, v'yikaver b'veto b'midbar, and he's buried in his house in the Midbar. Okay? Vayitein ha-melech. Okay, good. Let's stop here for a second. What is this? Why does Yoav need to be killed? What is it that Yoav did? Now remember, David warns Shlomo about Yoav, but why? What is it that Yoav did? So there are really two key stories. There are a number of stories, but two key stories. Who are these people that Yoav killed? The first one is Avner ben Ner. Interesting to name your son Avner ben Ner. Okay. And the second one is Amasa ben Yeter. Who are these two people? Who is Amasa and who is Avner? Anybody know?
Brothers.
Not brothers. Who are they?
Father and son.
No, they're two different people, two different situations. Who are they? So Avner, remember, knew was Shaul HaMelech's general. He was Shaul's Ramatkal. And there was one incident where Yoav's brother, Asael, it's a nice name, Asael, is running after Avner to try to kill Avner. They were, you know, in the middle of a fight. And Avner turns around and he throws some weapon at Asael, some spear, and it pierces him. It's a very graphic image. And Avner kills Asael in self-defense. Now, you could imagine Yoav is very upset about this because his brother was killed. Okay? And what does Yoav do? Avner wants to reconcile with David. And he comes to David, to Hebron, to try to meet. This is a diplomatic conference to try to resolve things. And David is very keen on this idea of reconciling with Beit Shaul. And the way to do it is through Avner. Because Shaul, of course, is already killed. This would end the, this would help to unify the Jewish people. And as Avner is leaving David's king, palace, or his, whatever it is, his Hebron, Yoav goes and kills him. And David is furious about this. Now, what was Yoav's motive in this situation? What do you think was his motive? Huh? Okay, vengeance for his brother, the death of his brother. That's number one. What's option number two? Personal interest, yeah. Who's going to become the new Ramatkal of David? If you have to, whenever two companies merge, the two CEOs become number one, whatever it is, someone's getting replaced, and that's going to be Yoav. But what's number three? What's option number three? Just giving the benefit of the doubt that he's acting in national interest. Okay, he really thinks that Avner is not trustworthy, and he thinks David is making a mistake here. But whatever the case, David finds this deeply problematic that Yoav intervenes on his own accord without consulting with David, and David feels that what was the consequence here, that an opportunity for national resolution and reconciliation has now been squandered. And who's blamed for this? David. Because, how could the Ramatkal go and kill someone without the king saying yes to this? So it's sort of David feels very, he's very angry that he's been accused of doing this. And you know what he does as a result? He leads the procession in Yoav, in Avner's funeral, to make the point. I had no role in this. Okay, so David feels that Avner, that Yoav is threatening national unity. And this happens again, because with Amasa, Amasa was Avshalom's Ramatkal, okay? And he came also to consult with David after Avshalom is killed, he rebels against David. And again, Yoav does the same thing. He kills Amasa. But in this case, you can't say that it's just out of vengeance or revenge for his brother, because this is is not the case of his brother. So this is again Yoav undermining the king. And in both cases, he threatens national unity, okay, which is a very big piece of David's agenda. So now, Yoav, on the other hand, also was, he did other things that were problematic. What else did Yoav do that was problematic? He was, he, in a somewhat manipulative way, brings Avshalom back to Yerushalayim after Avshalom leaves, and he tries to get the king to meet him, and it was sort of backhanded. But then finally, when David fights against Avshalom, his son who rebelled against him, what was the instructions David gave his soldiers? He told them one thing: just don't kill Avshalom. And who kills Avshalom? Yoav. Yoav kills Avshalom. And so again, he's this wild card. You never know what he's going to do, and he's dangerous. And of course, the final thing is that Yoav supported Adoniah in his campaign to be king. Now, Rabbi Alex Israel points out another factor which may be the reason why David feels that Yoav needs to. So, but why do you need to kill him, though? Is he, you know, the interaction with Daniel is sort of over. What's going on here? So if you look at let's look at Divrei Hayamim, Perek Kafbet Pasuk Tet. Divrei Hayamim Kafbet Tet. Divrei Hayamim is all the way in the back. Okay, Divrei Hayamim Aleph. Yeah. Kaf bet tet. Okay, Divrei Hayamim, 1, chapter 22, verse 9. And here we have a description. Vayomer David Shlomo Beno. Ani ayayim levavi livnot bayit l'shem Hashem Elokai. I wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. That was, my heart was set on doing this. Vayhi alai dvar Hashem emor. But Hashem told me, Dam larov shafachta milchamot gvelot asida lo tivne bayit l'shmi, ki damim rabim shafachta arta lefanai. Hashem told me, you spilled too much blood. Hinei veno lala huya ish minucha. But a son has been born to you. He will be a man of peace, of minucha. Vanichoti lo mikol oivav misaviv. He won't have any enemies or surrounding enemies, external enemies. Ki Shlomo yeshemo. Shlomo will be his name. V'shalom v'sheket etein al ar Yisrael b'yamav. And there will be peace and quiet and serenity in his time. Hu yivnevayit lishmi hu yalideven v'ani ani lo le'av v'achinoti kisei machto ala Yisrael arulam. Okay, two things here. First of all, we have a totally different version of how Shlomo becomes king. Okay? It's predestined. Okay? By Hashem. That's one point, and I don't want to get to that point right now, about how do we resolve contradictions between Sefer Melachim, the Book of Kings, and Divrei Hayamim, which is another retelling of some of the same events in Sefer Melachim, but from a slightly different angle. And so how do we reconcile some of these differences? Well, we will come back to this issue. But Bekitzur, what do we see here? What type of ruler is Shlomo supposed to be?
He's
a man of peace. Okay, all we are saying is give peace. Esther, give peace, give peace a chance. You have to do some chazar on your John Lennon, right? Okay. So this is Shlomo. Shlomo is not the warrior. Shlomo is the wise man. He's, you know, he's got a very different personality. And Yoav is not that type of general. He's not that type of advisor. Yoav grew up. Yoav is the warrior. Yoav is a general. Yoav has lived in a time of war, of turbulence. He's just not the right guy for Shlomo. He's never going to let go of these grievances and the turbulence, the war and the aggression, where Shlomo needs a more conciliatory or, you know, more even keel, less war. He's not a warmonger, but less war-oriented close advisor, okay? Because it's a different type of monarchy. The goal is now to build the Beit HaMikdash. No more external enemies have been pushed aside, and so Yoav is not the right guy. There's a parallel between, in some ways, between with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, what's the reason? You know, why was Moshe not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael? Why did he have to go? Okay, and what's the reason that we give? New. Why new? Okay, so if you look in the Psukim, you know, it seems like there's particular incidents where Moshe gets angry or Moshe doesn't respond properly and it's punishment or consequence of this. But the broader reason, the bigger reason, and this is something I learned extensively from a teacher of mine, Rav Yitzchak Tversky Shlita, who was here a few weeks ago as a scholar in residence, is a big piece of his on Tanit. It says it's clear Moshe is no longer the right leader for the Jewish people. Why? Because Moshe in some ways was a distraction for the Jewish people. When they saw him, they almost forgot about Hashem because he was such a dominant personality for them. Chet HaEgel. Moshe goes away. What happens? They lose it. They lose it. Exactly. They fall apart. Because they had seen Moshe perform all these miracles in the Midbar, he played too dominant a role in their imagination. And therefore there was a need. It wasn't that Moshe did anything wrong. It's just the people needed to step away from Moshe. They needed a different leader as they were moving into Eretz Yisrael and they were going to be self-sustaining. They're always complaining to Moshe because they see Moshe as the one who's in control of everything instead of Hashem. And that's a problem. And they need to move away from this and mature. And so it's not that Moshe did anything wrong, it's just the Jewish people needed something different at that point in time. And the same thing is true in some ways of Yoav. There's a slightly more charitable reading of Yoav's demotion and his killing. He wasn't the right guy at this point in time. Now, what about this notion of him fleeing to the Mizbeach? Okay, we'll do a few more minutes, and then we're gonna end a little bit early today. So there is this notion of fleeing to the Mizbeach that we call the right to asylum, and in today's maybe still true in Christianity. If you flee to the church, that they're not going to kill you. And I think we spoke about this last time. Samuel Beckett was killed by Henry II or III in the church, and etc. So where does this come from? If you go to Sefer Parshat Mishpatim, go to Sefer Shemot. This is Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Yeah. Shemot Kaf Aleph. Kaf Aleph. Kaf Aleph Yud Daled. Okay, you see Kafala 21:14. Parshat Mishpatim. Okay. 21:14. You should take a quick look at it. I'm just pulling a Rambam off the shelf. Okay, tell me what it says in 21:14. Sefer Shemot, Exodus 21:14. What's it say? 14. Yud Daled.
If you commit murder,
yeah,
you can't rely on the
altar. Yeah. V'chiyazid ish al re'eu l'hargo ve'arma. Me'i mizbechi tikachen lamut. You're not allowed to, if you commit murder, you're not allowed to run to the temple and seek sanctuary. Okay, you're not. It's not going to be permitted. You have to go to court. You have to be tried in court. So arei miklat is only meant for someone who killed unintentionally b'shogeg, and it's after a court case. But this is ki v'chiyazid. Okay, this is done b'mezid. Okay, good question. So we're looking at the Rambam Hilchot Rotzeach u'Shmirat Nefesh Perakei. The Rambam says here, let me just find this here. One second. Where is this? Okay. The Rambam suggests, I mean, based on the psukim here, that the again, you're not allowed to, you're not going to be permitted to run to the Mizbeach and gain sanctuary. So why is Yoav doing this? How do we explain this? So one can make the distinction between a murderer who is not allowed to seek sanctuary versus someone who just somehow has a fallout with the king, And the notion here is that, you know, fallout with the king, there is this other domain that's beyond the king's power, and that's the Beit HaMikdash. And there you can seek asylum. And this might explain why Yoav feels that it's justified to go to this place and to seek asylum there. Ultimately, though, he is he's killed, okay? And perhaps for the... maybe he's killed for the murder of Avshalom, in a sense. Whatever it is, he is killed. Okay, final point in this chapter. Let's go back to... Let's just finish up here. okay, we're on Pasuk Lamed Hey, right? Okay, let's run through this quickly. Okay, final piece of this this perek, and we'll do another 5 minutes. We'll finish up. Vayitena Melech. Okay, et b'nayav ben Yehuda tachtav al tzava v'tzadok haKohen Natan Melech tachad Aviatar. Tzadok and Aviatar. Sorry, Tzadok becomes the Kohen. Aviatar becomes the head of his army. Vayishlach haMelech vayikra the Shimi. Final person who we need to deal with. Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera was a close ally of Shaul. He curses David when David is being kicked out of Yerushalayim, and he's a bad fellow. David does not do anything to him then. He promises not to. But let's see what Shlomo does. Vayikra leShimi vayomer lo, b'nei lecha bayit b'Yerushalayim v'yashavta sham. He tells him, come build a house in Yerushalayim and dwell here. V'lo teitzei misham ana va'ana. And don't leave Yerushalayim. Vayal b'yom tzeitcha v'avarta nachal Kidron. If you leave, you go past Nachal Kidron. This is the border of Yerushalayim. Yadoi teta kimot tamut amcha yevoshecha. Then I'm going to kill you. So Shlomo keeps the promise of David that he's not going to kill Shimi, but he puts a new condition. He says, if you were to leave Yerushalayim, then, so he's keeping him under close watch. He's under surveillance. Vayomer Shimi leMelech, Tov haDavar, fine, no problem. Kasher diber Adoni haMelech, Kein yaseh avdecha. Vayeshev Shimi b'Yerushalayim yamim rabim. Shimi stays in Yerushalayim many days. After 3 years, what happens? Two slaves run away from Shimi's household. So he wants to get his household. His avadim. He's told that his servants ran to Gat. They ran to Aza. Okay? Vayakom Shimi vayachavo shel chamro. Shimi takes his donkey, goes vayaylach gata el achish levakesh et avadav. Vayalach Shimi vayabeit avadam migat. Shimi goes and gets his servants back. But what did he do? He left Yerushalayim. Vayugad leShlomo ki alach Shimi Yerushalayim gat vayashov. Shlomo was told about this. Vayishlach haMelech vayikra leShimi vayomer elav halomi shishpaticha vashem ayid bechalimor. V'yom tzitchavach da'ana v'ana yadot yagimot tamut. I told you not to do this. I told you. You were going to die the day that you left. You know, Yerushalayim, I swore about this. Vatomrei lai tova davar shemati. He says, fine, I get it. Don't worry, I won't do it again. Madua lo shamarta ichvat Hashem et avinza sher tziviti alecha. This is Shlomo continuing. Why didn't you follow my commandment? Vayomra melech al shemi. So the king now says to Shimi, I know, Shimi, all the terrible things you did to my father. Hashem will return your evil upon your head. My kingdom will be strong forever. Benayahu goes and he kills Shimi ben Gera, v'hamamacha nachona biyad Shlomo, and the kingdom was established in Shlomo's hands, and he's gotten rid of all of his political enemies, all of the threats. And pretty tough, Shlomo, pretty tough. But sometimes you have to do what you got to do; otherwise, you're gonna have trouble later on. So he does what he needs to do. And we spoke about this, that the Radak mentions that these are Torah values of establishing your kingdom, and you know, the king needs to do these types of things. We spoke about this. Is this Machiavellian, or is this, you know, ethical thing to do? We spoke about that last week. And with this, we conclude Perek Bet. And please, God, Bezrat Hashem, next week, we will learn Perek Gimel together. Yisher Koach. Have a good day, everybody. We'll be back at 9:30 next week.